Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everybody. This is the Policy and Implementation Working Group call on the 25th of September 2013. On the call today, we have Gideon Rupp, Michael Graham, Maureen Cubberley, Holly Reich, Cheryl Langdonneau, Klaus Stoll, Tom Barrett, Avi Doria, Alan Greenberg, J. Scott Evans, Annick Manskalesi, Eparna Shridhar, Eric Brenner-Williams, James Waddell, Marie-Laure Leminer, Chuck Jones, and Greg Chapin. We have apologies from Olga Cavalli, Nick Steinbeck, Christina Rosette, Krista Papak, and Kieran Mullen-Sowerville. And from staff, we have Marika Kernings, Mary Wong, Lars Hoffman, and myself, Matthew Peregrine. I'd like to remind all participants to please state their names before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you very much, and over to you, J. Scott.
Thank you. This is J. Scott Evans speaking for the recording. I'm sharing this today. Somebody needs to mute their computer because I can myself. All right. The first thing, business is if anyone has update to their statement of interest. Hearing none, I am now going to ask Michael Graham if he could bring us up to date on the sub-team meeting that was held yesterday. And I thought I saw, just quickly, Marika, a handout or an attachment that you sent around today on the mind mapping, but I don't see it up here in the window on my Adobe Connect. We've got a lot of typing going on in the chat. Michael, why don't you go ahead and... Well, I mean, it'd be nice, Marika, if we could... I see you. It was for the sub-team, if they could just inform us what they're working off of. So, Michael, I'm going to turn it over to you.
Okay. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. We had our first call yesterday, quite early in the morning for me, and trying to find which telephone I was using. Between that and emails, I think I finally gotten communication going. And we had most all of the members of the subgroup on the call yesterday, which was good. Basically, what we are doing, we have established that we now have a timetable, a timeline, which is going to end somewhere around November 4th, the intent being to have a draft of both a work plan and a proposed timeline that will be the basis for further discussion both in our teleconferences and in Buenos Aires in the face-to-face meeting. Of course, since it was the first meeting, a lot of what we did was trying to establish common ground and common purpose. And I think the certain things that came out of that meeting, one, recognizing the challenge that we all face, and I apologize for the dog, if you could hang on just a moment.
That happens to me with my dog every time I get on the phone with the federal government. So.
Cheryl here. Michael did know he was getting workmen coming. He just thought they might be fashionably late or perhaps not early as they may be. So, and I'm actually going to get Natalie to get them to call me back so I can switch to my handset because my headset is going to pick up all the bird noises and everything else from now on too.
Okay. Okay, so I now have the dog and Stanley Summer here to clean the house. Basically, though, we discussed the challenge that both we as a subgroup and the entire group faces in devising the report according to the charter, where we're trying to come up with a plan and at the same time one that acknowledges and incorporates the fact that very few instances will one size fit all. We've established a sort of a working routine. We're going to try to meet once a week in at least hour-long phone calls and also utilize emails to work on the project in order to give us some basis. A lot of what we decided was to get a historic perspective and then a perspective from the materials that we have as the policy and implementation work group, both to go over the charter, the public comments, the other materials that we all have received, At the same time, Marika has agreed to take a look and assist in putting together the work plan by reviewing work plans that may have been developed with other work groups and PDPs. And once we have that, that hopefully will help give us some direction in what we want to come up with and also some approaches that have been taken in other circumstances and determine which ones we might be best to apply in this circumstance. The two projects that we have preparing for next week's call, and we don't have a doodle out yet to find out when that will be, maybe the same time as last week, if that's appropriate, but we'll check with the group, is twofold. One, on an individual basis to review the materials and see if we can develop some ideas what we believe might be appropriate in terms of a timeline for the project. That obviously is going to be subject to the larger discussion and also subject to the final plan, what all it will entail. We're also looking at the mind map along with the charter and trying to connect the dots. The mind map is very useful, but part of its usefulness is to see how many different strands there are and try to pull them together into a single or a few strands. Now, let's see. So we've got that. We're also going to be using the wiki to post materials. And I'm not sure, Marika, is that going to be closed to the subgroup or is that going to be open to the working group?
This is Marika. I think by default the wiki is open at least for everyone to view. We can set it up in such a way that it's only the sub-team members that can add it or post documents there.
Okay, great. Because what I'd like to do is during the process, I think we would all be fine with anyone who reviews the material that we're working on, your comments. I think in terms of the actual work, though, keeping it down to a small group is the only way that we're going to be able to accomplish coming out up with a working plan that will be the basis for discussion. In that regard, however, leadership has communicated, and the one area that we do not have a representative and we would like to put it out there, if someone from one of the contracting parties would be willing to join the subgroup, we'd like to add someone in that regard just so that we have as many general perspectives as possible in working on this and also in working on the timeline. And our goal, again, as I said, is by November 4th to come up with both a proposed timeline and then some proposals in regard to the work plan. Some of it will be including use of subgroups, perhaps, like ours, and seeing how this particular subgroup works in regard to the entire group, I think, well, we're hoping will give us some insight into that and how subgroups can best be used to address some particular issues without getting the entire group involved that then again could be brought back to the entire group for either discussion or approval or change. And so that's where we are. I mean, one call isn't a whole lot of time, but I think we've got some good direction and all of the participants added their two cents, which was very good.
Thank you, Michael, very much. I appreciate that very much. So we're looking forward to hearing what you all propose to the larger group by November 4th. In the meantime, let's turn it over to Marika to cover point three on our today's agenda. Marika?
Yes, this is Marika. Just give me a second to pull up my slide. Coming up slowly. So, here we go. So this is Marika. Basically, on the last meeting, I think there was a request from working group members to take you through some of the basic documents and processes that basically underlie the discussions that we're having today and that form the basis of the charter questions that are, and the issues we're tasked to look at. So basically, the charter already pointed out that there are a couple of documents that are, you know, required readings or should be the basic understanding from where we start our conversations, and it's everyone should have that same knowledge in order to be able to understand the questions we're dealing with, and as well understand where they come from and how they fit into the overall picture of policy development within the GNSO. So basically, one part of that is the Annex A of the ICANN bylaws and the GNSO PDP policy development process manual. Those two parts really form the basis for how a PDP is currently conducted. So one part is in the ICANN bylaws, and the other document is part of the GNSO operating procedures. Then there's also the staff discussion paper that was published in January 2013 that basically was inspired by some of the debates that were going on in the community on what is policy, what's implementation, how can we can we create better dividing lines? What are some of the questions we would need to answer in order to get some clarity around that? So from a staff perspective, we tried to outline what we thought were some of the main issues in this discussion, and also try to include some possible steps forward or approaches that could be considered in dealing with these kind of issues. We basically put that out for public comment as well to get some community conversation going around that, and then that formed as well the basis for a session we organized in Beijing, where we had different community representatives basically sharing their views on some of the questions that were outlined in the paper or drawn from that paper, and then that really formed the basis as well for the GNSO Council then to decide that they wanted to start looking at some of those issues that specifically affected the GNSO and start some work on those, trying to come to some recommendations and move forward basically from there. So of course it would be helpful to actually look at the current GNSO policy development process, and what I've tried to do as well is in taking you through the different steps is actually trying to highlight as well where I think, at least from my perspective, I think the different charter questions fit in. And where, as well, some of the initial steps in looking at these charter questions may come in. And that's something, as well, that we looked at yesterday with the sub-team, because there may be some information in there that the sub-team may find helpful in thinking through how to approach the charter question and what may be some of those initial, fact-finding efforts to be able to come to an answer to some of these charter questions. So just a little bit of background on the current state of the policy development process, because it was reviewed not too long ago as part of the overall GNSO review that took place, and at that time the Council was tasked to make sure that the new GNSO policy development process would incorporate the working group approach that we had already been using for a while, but actually the rules hadn't caught up to that yet, and we're still talking about task force model. And it was also intended to make it more effective and responsive to ICANN's policy development needs. And I think to a large extent what that meant was really making sure that the flexibility existed there to encourage wider community input, early participation, further community engagement, discussion. So a lot of steps were built in there to really make sure that there's a lot of flexibility in there to really make sure that depending on the issue at hand, the right approach can be taken, but at the same time in an effective and efficient manner. So that revised PDP was adopted by the ICANN board in December 2011, and since then all the PDPs have been operating under those revised rules. So basically what you see here on the screen is really from start to finish what a policy development process is. So really going from step one, identify the issue, till the end, the actual implementation of the policy recommendations. And here, as you see, I think this is where Charter Question 1 probably comes in, which basically asks to develop a set of principles that would underpin any GNSO policy and implementation-related discussions, taking into account existing GNSO operating procedures. And as pointed out before, then you're specifically looking at GNSO working group guidelines and the PDP manual, where existing principles may either exist explicitly or implicitly, and those may form a starting point for discussion. And then I'm also pointing here to the staff discussion paper, which also outlined a number of proposed principles that may form a starting point or may provide some inspiration for the working group to look at this specific charter question. Then diving a little bit deeper into that, into the process. So basically the first step of a policy development process is like the issue identification. And one of the questions that is supposed to be asked or is expected to be asked is the issue intended to result in consensus policy? Because if an answer is yes, you are required to go through a policy development process. However, if the answer is no, the GNSO council can decide to use another process. And I think there is where Charter Question 2 actually comes in, because at the moment there is no set other process. So the GNSO Council has used ad hoc processes. You know, we sometimes call them like non-PDP working groups or drafting teams. You know, we have the standing committee. So the different ad hoc processes that the GNSO Council has used to address certain issues or questions where it was deemed that those were not intended to result in consensus policy. But there's no formal process or processes that the council can pick from. And I think that has as well resulted in certain questions or confusion, because what does it mean if the GNSO Council adopts recommendations through such a process? Does it have any standing with the board or any requirements for the board to consider anything that doesn't come through a policy development process? Or what are the requirements for, you know, community participation or public input if it's a non-PDP process? So, again, here the Charter Question 2 specifically looks at this question or asked the working group to develop a process for developing GTLD policy, and it could be in the form of policy guidance. We should also include criteria for when it would be appropriate to use such a process instead of a PDP. And I think, as Michael already alluded to as well, it's something we discussed briefly yesterday in the sub-team as well. Of course, a possible answer may be as well that there are different processes that could be used depending on the circumstances, or that you would have, you know, one process with different kind of add-ons or things you can take out depending on what you're looking at. So that's something that the working group will need to look at on what such a potential process could look like. And a suggestion there would be to, for example, start with looking at some of the other ad hoc GNSO processes that have been used in the past. The SDI is one of those such models. The SCI, the Standing Committee for Improvements and Implementation, is another one. And the other efforts that have taken place or that are currently taking place where we're not using the PDP, but we're still looking at, you know, policy-related issues. And then also we did put a, as well, a proposed process or a starting draft of a process in the SAB discussion paper. So again, that may also serve as providing some inspiration to the working group as you're looking at this specific charter question. Then basically, once that has happened, so basically we're assuming here that the issue at hand, it is intended to result in consensus policy, so it moves into the request for an issue report. So basically, an issue report can be requested by either the board, an advisory committee, or the GNSO Council. In the case of request by the board or an advisory committee, it automatically proceeds to the development of a preliminary issue report, while if it's by the council, there is a vote required in order to proceed to developing the preliminary issue report. So the issue report is developed by staff, and the objective there is really to dig in what is the issue about. There are certain requirements in the PDP manual as well as to what elements need to be covered there. It also includes a section on is the issue considered in scope of GNSO policy development, so is it within the remit of the GNSO to actually look at that issue. It also includes a staff recommendation where, from our perspective, we can provide some feedback on whether from whether we think it's a good idea or a bad idea, or certain suggestions on how such an issue may be addressed or move forward in the PDP. And that preliminary issue report is then put out for public comment to allow for community input and feedback. You know, did we cover all the relevant information addressing the issue? Do people have a strong view on whether there should or shouldn't be a PDP on the issue? So again, all that information from the public comment period is then incorporated in the issue report and as well provided to the GNSO Council in the form of a final issue report, at which stage the Council then needs to decide whether or not they want to proceed with a policy development process. So the next step is needed. As I said, you know, the final issue report has been presented, and then in the case, if the PDP or if the issue report was requested by the ICANN board, it automatically moves into the next phase, which is the initiation of the PDP. There's no intermediate vote required by the GNSO Council at that point. However, if it was an issue report that was requested by an advisory committee or by the council, there is an intermediate vote that needs to happen before it actually moves to the next phase, which is, I think we call it like the formal initiation of the policy development process. And within that, then the next step is the creation of a drafting team that would develop the PDP working group charter. And once the working group charter is adopted, then is the moment when the working group is formed, call for volunteers goes out, and the working phase starts. And maybe I should pause a second and tell people as well, like, if something is not clear or you have any questions, please feel free to raise your hand in the Adobe Connect, and I'm happy to stop and take questions in between the presentation. So moving then to the next phase, the working group phase, basically, again, the PDP manual allowance outlines a number of requirements that a working group needs to meet or needs to follow as it deliberates and develops its initial report. One of those is to seek the input from other ICANN advisory committees and supporting organizations at an early start of the process. It's a request for stakeholder group and constituency statements, again, as well as the early stage of the process, which then form the basis often for the working group deliberations on this issue. Basically, the initial report is also expected to include a set of proposed recommendations, highlighting what input has been received and how that has been addressed, also looking at the potential impact of those recommendations. And basically, it's when initial report is published, the objective is really to get community input on that and determine whether the working group is on the right track with its recommendations or not. So based on the comments received, the working group is then tasked to review those recommendations and really go through those one by one and address those and or basically show how they have been addressed or considered as part of the deliberations. And once that process is completed and all the issues have been addressed, the working group moves ahead and publishes a working group final report, which basically includes the completion of all the statements, the recommendations, and the level of consensus achieved for all those recommendations, and also includes a statement concerning the impact of the proposed recommendations, or at least what the working group expects will happen. Just put some notes here as well, because throughout those conversations, there are, of course, there's sometimes either specific questions on in relation to implementation, for example, would this be possible to be implemented if we would recommend this, or we do as well some checking already with staff as we go through the process just to make sure that what is being developed is something that will be workable when it comes to the stage of implementation. So basically that's a bit of an ad hoc process that we use that throughout the process and basically as applicable or time allows. In certain cases, there may be no need to consult on a weekly basis. In other cases, you do want to get the input from colleagues that eventually will be tasked with implementing those recommendations. So we discuss with them regularly, or sometimes they also, for example, subscribe to the mailing list so they can follow conversations directly and respond as appropriate. I think it's also important to highlight here that PDP recommendations themselves really vary in detail and scope. And I think that's as well when we come to the discussion, when is something policy, when is something implementation, that we'll sometimes see as well that implementation-related discussions occur when there's very little detail in the actual policy recommendations. So sometimes they can be in the form of high-level principles. Well, we've also had situations where the actual policy recommendations provided the actual language that needed to be written into the agreements or into the consensus policy, where, of course, there's very little room for interpretation or very few questions that would occur in those cases. So I think that's something to take into account as well as you're looking at these questions, that there are different gradations of policy recommendations, and maybe there needs to be a need for more consistency, or maybe it's just not something that can be achievable, and we just need to be able to address different situations and scenarios with whatever framework we would come up with. It's also important to note that final reports sometimes also include implementation guidance or already identify specific questions that the working group expects that need to be addressed as part of the implementation process. We recently had a PDP, for example, on the inter-registrar transfer policy, where working group deliberate on certain aspects and realize that those were really, really implementation-related questions, and they didn't really feel equipped to answer those, unless they would add a lot of time as well to their work. So they basically identified those as specific questions to be considered or discussed as part of the implementation process. So, again, I think there sometimes the balance needs to be found as well into when something is being punted and saying, it's too complicated for us to deal with, or when you're really saying, well, we don't have the expertise here, and we think it's better suited for a staff-led effort in trying to get that expertise on board and come up with a solution that would fit the policy recommendations. One of the revisions or the improvements of the revised PDP is also this concept of implementation review teams. So the final report, the working group itself may recommend whether it thinks it would be a good idea to create an implementation review team or not. And as I said, I think based on recent experience, I think all the PDP working groups have actually done so, and we have formed implementation review teams. But as we'll see in a couple of slides down, that's also one of the questions where in the PDP manual currently, there's very little detail on how such an implementation review team should work, how it should be composed, you know, what is required. So it's one of the questions the working group is also asked to look at, you know, should there be more detail? Or again, there may not be a one-size-fits-all, so how can you ensure that flexibility while still at the same time provide, you know, transparency and predictability to the community or members participating in such efforts? So then looking at, once the final report has been submitted to the GNSO Council, the Council will deliberate on whether or not to adopt those recommendations. As said, then at that point, the Council will also direct whether an implementation review team needs to be formed at the moment the Board adopts the recommendations. We're just assuming here that everything goes well so that the GNSO Council adopts the recommendations, and then they basically move on to the Board for their consideration. So basically when the Board votes on it, and again, I don't think it's of particular interest here in going through the scenarios where, you know, a case where the Board may disagree with the Council and what process in place there, but it is all lined out here, so I think you can review that at your leisure. I think that the main thing here to note is that once the Board adopts the recommendation, basically the resolution will typically direct the ICANN CEO to develop and complete an implementation plan and continue communication with the community on such work. So from that, it will then move into what we call implementation phase. So then it's basically moving from, you know, community-led effort to more staff-driven process. Someone want to speak up or? Yes. Okay. So basically it moves into the implementation phase.
Okay.
So, hello, someone wants to speak up? Or someone needs to mute their phone? All right, I'm just going to continue. So basically, I think here there are three charter questions that relate specifically to this phase of the process. So the one is like a framework for implementation-related discussions associated with GNSO policy recommendations. And there's a question on criteria to be used to determine when an action should be addressed by a policy process and when it should be considered implementation. And also the question on further guidance on how GNSO implementation review teams as defined in the PDP manual are expected to function and operate. I think here, you know, an obvious starting point for looking at these questions is looking at the PDP manual, what is currently there in relation to implementation or what can be derived from that may form the basis for some of these questions. Reviewing some of the recent implementation review teams, as I said, we've had a couple already. I think they've been used in varying degrees, and I think it's just fair to say as well that for staff it's a really new concept, so we're trying as well to, you know, find our way in how to make those work best. And I think as well as partly managing expectations where, you know, we go from a working group that has been meeting on a weekly basis to an implementation review team that typically meets less regular because as the implementation moves forward, there are more ad hoc stops where staff may need to consult or where feedback may be needed because, of course, there's also a phase where staff basically needs to get their head around, you know, what is it actually, what those policy recommendations are intended to do, what needs to be put in place to make that happen. And as I said, we've also put forward a proposed process in the staff discussion paper looking at some of these questions. So again, it may be worth for the working group looking at that to see what can be derived or what can serve as starting points for that as well in the process. So I thought it would maybe be helpful as well to provide you some perspectives from our side in relation to the implementation process. And I just want to take a note here as well. You know, this is not looking at the experience that we had with the new GTLD-related implementation process, because I think that has taken on quite some different forms and shape, and it's probably not the typical example or what we're looking at when we're talking about a PDP process. So as I said before, like throughout the PDP itself, you know, staff that is likely tasked with the implementation is kept abreast and requested to provide input if and when appropriate on implementation-related issues. So we there as the policy staff typically serve as a channel of communication. We have, you know, regular calls with different colleagues in different departments where we typically just run through the different efforts we're supporting and you know, basically say, look, this is what they're looking at, and then basically see if there are any issues or questions. In certain cases, working groups will come up as well with specific questions that they want to have addressed, and again, that we serve as a communication channel and try to get feedback as soon as possible on those, so that that information can already be fed in throughout the process as the working group deliberates, and hopefully that helps as well in formulating the policy recommendations, and then make sure that it's something comes out that is actually implementable at the end of the day. And so what we do when the board approves the recommendation, we form an internal implementation team, which basically consists of members of the different teams that are affected or will be involved in the actual implementation of the policy recommendation. So typically that will involve someone from the registrar teams, depending on, you know, where the recommendations are directed, someone from our legal team, someone from the compliance team. So first step is basically just to walk through all the recommendations and really try to convey what the intent or the thought behind some of those recommendations are, and be able to identify as well if there are any questions that come up through that process, that either can those be addressed through, you know, providing some further feedback. And again, there, the policy staff person supporting the working group typically takes a lead role in that, trying to, you know, convey what the working group discussed, which issues they considered in certain recommendations. And as part of that process, there's sometimes as well questions that are identified already that will need to go back to an implementation review team, where it's not clear what was intended or whether multiple approaches could be pursued in actually implementing that recommendation. So that's something that's done as part of that process. And as part of that, we'll then as well develop the next steps in order to develop an implementation plan. So that if there's an implementation review team, consultations will take place as well with that team if and when appropriate. They typically involve questions on clarifying questions, you know, did you mean this or did you mean that, but also indeed, you know, testing, this is a way we can implement this policy recommendation, does that meet the expected outcome of the working group, or is there something that is still missing? There may also be community consultations and public comment that deems appropriate. As said, you know, policy recommendations come in different shapes and flavors, and in certain cases where indeed it's a copy-paste situation, there may not be a need for a public comment period or community consultation. But in other cases where, for example, through the implementation process, certain questions have been identified that have been worked through with the implementation review team, they still may need checking with the community to really make sure that is still as part of the same understanding of what was intended by the policy recommendations. And once that all has been completed, the final implementation plan will be posted, and an announcement of the effective date will be communicated to the affected parties. And just to note as well, the community consultations in certain cases may involve as well consultations directly with the affected parties as well, talking about, you know, time frames and what time may be needed, and as well some clarifying questions or understanding how complicated or how easy something may be to implement or not. So here I thought it would maybe be helpful as well to actually identify some questions or issues from our perspective on that may come up in this debate and that we see as important issues that we need to be considered or addressed. So basically one of the questions is, and we sometimes struggle with, like, what happens if issues arise that are considered policy, and who actually makes that determination? Indeed, is it whenever staff has a doubt, does that make it immediately a policy or implementation question and should be put out to the community, or is it the implementation review team that flags that? Is it the Genius or Council that flags it? There's currently no set process for it, and I think in certain cases, you know, we will come back because it's obvious that we're dealing with a policy-related issues, but in other cases, it may not be so clear, or it may be in the eye of the beholder. We've had conversations as well, like, if you don't like something, you'll say it's policy, and if you really think it's a great idea, you'll say it's implementation. And again, having a framework there would really be helpful as well from our perspective. The PDP manual does provide some guidance, because it does provide the option that if the proposed implementation is considered inconsistent with the Genius or Council recommendations, the Genius or Council may notify the board and request the board review the proposed implementation. So that option does exist under the current PDP manual. As already noted, like, how can we ensure flexibility in any implementation-related framework? As you know, a one-size-fits-all may not be appropriate here, and I think we do want to make sure as well that staff does have the flexibility in getting work done and not necessarily being restrained by a very overly complex process, which in certain cases may not be necessary at all, where something can be done relatively quickly and is not deemed controversial or complicated. So I think that's something to be considered as well. And as I said, you know, it comes back to the third point as well, like, in principle, implementation is execution of policy recommendations. How can we make sure it works efficiently and effectively while also respecting that, of course, we're operating in a multi-stakeholder environment? So now briefly, maybe I should pause another second here. I see there's a lot of conversation going on in the chat, but I haven't been able to keep up with that. But if there are any questions people want to ask on the PDP and the process that I've outlined so far, please feel free to raise your hand. If not, then the next part, I'm just looking briefly at the staff. Oh, I see Anne has raised her hand. Anne, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, Marika. I'm just curious about, in terms of the implementation review team, how is it decided whether or not an IRT is needed and who's going to be on it? There's been a bit of discussion in the chat, but I'm particularly interested to know how the whole IRT process came about and how it's determined the constitution of the IRT.
So this is Marika. So the way it has happened to date is basically that working groups, as part of their report, already identify whether they believe that an implementation review team is needed. And I think at least the recent PDPs and all of those, they recommended that, and then it was also included as part of the motion. So then the council basically decides that an implementation review team is needed and directs staff to form one once the recommendations are adopted. In principle, the council, even if the working group would say, we don't think an implementation review team is needed, we don't want one, the council can still decide that they would want one, and basically when they adopt the recommendations, the normal step would be that then at that point they also identify that once the board adopts those recommendations, an implementation review team should be formed.
Scott, may I ask a follow-up question?
Let me first maybe finish all, because I think there was another question in there who would consist of. So let me just answer that, and then I'll get to your follow-up, if that's okay. So basically, the PDP manual doesn't really prescribe how such a team should look, but how we've taken it, and I think how it has worked so far, is that call for volunteers goes out to the working group that was involved in developing the policy recommendations. Because the idea behind it is, of course, that the implementation review team is really supposed to focus on implementing the policy recommendations that were developed. It's not intended to reopen discussions or come up with new policy recommendations. So, you know, part of the balance to be found is that if you get a lot of new people into that process, they may not have the background of all the working group, you know, deliberations that went before it to get to those recommendations, and, you know, maybe start rehashing certain conversations that were already had. So what the focus so far, I think, has really been on those members that were involved in developing those policy recommendations, and those are also the ones involved in the IRT. Although I think there have been instances as well where certain groups may have designated someone else from their stakeholder group or constituency to be involved, but under the understanding that, you know, that they have reviewed and understand the materials that went into developing those policy recommendations, so to make sure that they come in with the same knowledge and understanding of the recommendations as others in that group.
Okay, then the second question I had, just to understand it on a practical level, was the Trademark Clearinghouse Implementation Group an IRT, or was it some other type of implementation group?
I think that was another kind. I mean, they were called, I think, IRT as well, but it wasn't in the PDP context. I think that was a completely different group that was formed in a different kind of context. So I don't think it serves as a model for what the implementation review team is viewed as within the PDP manual. Although, you know, it may serve as, you know, it may be something that the working group may want to look at, as there may be some information or expertise that can be derived from that, but that group wasn't constituted as an implementation review team as conceived within the PDP manual, as far as I understand.
Okay, and just one last practical question regarding that process. Was that implementation team, when was that disbanded, if you will? It's a timing question related to when they concluded that their work was done, and was that in fact actually prior to the full implementation of the program, if you will?
This is Jay Scott. A couple of things on that. Since I served on the RIT, I guess I'm in the best position to answer it first. With regard to your first question, there was no PDP as we have it now, because that was the very meeting, Marika, where the working groups that developed the PDP and the working group guidelines were constituted. That was Mexico 2000.
And barely here.
Have to speak up.
Well, I'm having trouble with my line, and, you know, I got to tell you, I don't know who picked AT&T, but we have not had this much trouble in the past. I'm not necessarily happy with this. Can you hear me now?
Yep.
Okay. I said I'm perhaps the best person to speak to this because I was on the IRT. First, the PDP process that we have today was not in existence in March of 2009, because the groups that came up with what we operate under now were only constituted at that very meeting. So we had no working group guidelines at the time, and we had no PDP process like we do now. I would argue that the IRT is similar to what we have now in the fact that it was a team put together to guide staff with regards to implementation details. As to your second question, Anne, when did this end? We were told to deliver a report by May 29, 2009, which we did. We were then asked to take that report and come to the Sydney meeting in June of 2009 and deliver that to the community, which we did. At the end of that time, while it was never explicitly stated, I think the majority of us felt that our work was done.
Oh, I'm sorry, Jay Scott. My question related to the trademark clearinghouse implementation team that worked in 2012.
Then I would have to look to Marika, but it seems to me since this policy was in effect at the time, that is probably one that was under the current PDP, but I'll let her speak to that.
And this is Marika. I don't think that was formed as an implementation review team. I think there were some consultations and conversations that were held, but I don't think that was ever conceived as a formal implementation review team, at least as I am aware.
I know it had the word implementation in the title of the group, and I guess, you know, it probably projecting a little bit a thought that perhaps that group was disbanded too early. I'm not sure.
Well, at least it wasn't a group that was formed under the direction of the council. I think it's, you know, basically the implementation review teams we're talking about here, and that's in the charter questions. Those are the ones that are formed under the direction of the GNSO council when the policy recommendations are adopted. And I think here we're looking at a very different. And yes, maybe implementation was in the title, but it didn't relate to any of the concepts that are explained in the PDP manual.
Right,
and
it's sort of an informal method of an implementation function.
Scott, I'm gonna do chair's prerogative here. We're getting bogged down. If you have any further questions, you can direct them to the list. But I'd like for Marika to go ahead and finish her presentation. Thank you.
Jay Scott, there's still some people that had their hand up. Do you quickly want to go through them?
Yes,
or
please. Yes, please.
I think Chuck had his hand up, but he dropped his hand.
It's real brief. Welcome to the reason we're having this working group.
Alan?
Yeah, I just want to comment on something the comment Jay Scott made about in 2009 we didn't have the PDP as we know it today. That's not quite accurate. We didn't have all the structure around it that we have today, and we didn't have the rewritten rules. We were using working groups already, although we didn't have a formal set of guidelines for exactly how working groups should work. But they had been mandated prior to that by the GNSO reorganization, so we weren't that far away from what we are today. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. So moving along to the next part is looking at the staff discussion paper and community input that was received subsequently. So as I said before, basically the reason why we wrote the staff paper was really following on the increased community focus on this discussion on, you know, what is policy and what is implementation. It was largely inspired by what was happening in the new TTLB program. I think at the same time, there was as well the realization that, you know, looking forward and looking ahead, similar questions could arise, and it may be important to, you know, take them head on and identify what we're actually dealing with and how we can potentially address those. As I said, the PDP manual and NXA are very detailed and prescriptive as to what needs to happen as part of the policy development part of the process, but there's very little guidance on how implementation should be conducted, and that's a question I think that this working group is looking at as well. Like, should more guidance be included there to avoid that some of those questions happen, or at least there's a clear community expectation of what's going to happen, or how certain questions may be addressed, or who is involved, or how it's done. And as I said, there's currently no real clear process or predictability on how to manage implementation-related questions. And as I said, we've tried different approaches, there are different models that have been used. Some people really like it, others don't. So again, having a kind of predictability or a framework in place, everyone knows what they can expect. May help addressing some of those questions, because I think as we recognize in the paper, we may not be able to draw a very clear black line between what is policy and what is implementation. But if we have a framework in dealing with those questions, that may already address some of the issues, hopefully. So the discussion paper itself basically outlines a draft framework that tries to identify a number of steps, criteria, and principles that may be helpful in filling out that framework and providing guidance when it comes to policy and implementation-related questions. It identifies a number of questions that from our perspective, should be addressed or considered in this conversation. And we also included some like short-term improvements that may be considered in dealing with some of those issues. But the overall focus is really on developing a clear overall process and identifying as well clear roles and responsibilities for all the stakeholders involved in such a process. So it's very hard to see, but I would like to encourage you to actually look at this in the documents. I said this is all on the wiki and as well what I sent out last week. Because in this, we're trying to outline a bit the broad steps of this framework. What are the questions that need to be asked, or how can you go through this process? And again, looking at the one strand, looking at the implementation-related questions, what you see there in orange, you see three big boxes there. What we try to do there, for example, is look at, some of you may know that in the applicant guidebook, there's actually a process incorporated in there on how to deal with potential changes that need to be made as part of the implementation. So we actually looked at that and said, okay, well, maybe that can serve as a model for dealing indeed with implementation-related questions when you're clear it's implementation, but you still feel that there should be a community consultation involved. You can't just, staff make this decision and that's it. No, we are aware that there are certain discussions that need to be had, but we are clear at the same time that we're dealing with implementation-related issues. So that is a process that we developed on the basis of that you may want to have a look at and see if it provides some useful information or a basic framework for looking at this question. And it also tackles, like, how can you actually, once you're in that implementation process, like, what needs to happen for you to actually make that determination that you need to go back to your policy process. The policy development process. What triggers that, or how does that jump happen when you need to go back to the formal process? And again, there you look at the two questions: are we recommending consensus policies or changes to existing consensus policies? Well, in that case, you will need to go through the policy development process. Or are we looking at something else? Are we looking at policy guidance, where we realize that it's a policy-related question, not purely implementation? Is there another mechanism of addressing that? And I think there. We have some very basic suggestions, but again, that's, I think, one of the tasks or one of the main questions that the working group will be looking at. What kind of process or how should that look? And again, are there various processes that could be explored? That, when the council gets a certain question, it basically looks at the different processes it has available, assesses, what is the priority or the urgency or, how broad of a community issue is this, and then can decide which of those processes is the most appropriate to follow. But again, it's very clear from the outset what each process will entail, who is involved, and at what stage what will happen. So basically, as I said, we put this out for public comments. We got quite some feedback, 10 different contributions, mainly from GNSO participants, which, again, I think demonstrates, and we've seen it as well, of course, in the interest in this working group, that it's an issue that is of main interest to the GNSO. I think, again, partly as well inspired by what's been happening in the new GTLD program and some of the conversations that have happened there. I think most of the contributions really recognize the importance of the topic and all appreciated the staff paper trying to, you know, flag some of those issues and basically starting off the discussion on this. I think most comments emphasize as well that, you know, any framework should be forward-looking. You know, let's look back in the past, what happened, but let's look ahead. It should be predictable, make sure to clarify the role of the different stakeholder groups, and base it on principles such as fairness, notice, and due process. There was also a lot of focus on making sure that due importance is given to considering implementation-related issues or questions as part of the policy development process itself. Several also suggested to review existing mechanisms and practices to see if there would be possible models that could be discerned from that. And overall, there was really broad support to actually continue the dialogue, and some suggestions included as well on how to move forward on that. So following that, we said, okay, then maybe now the next step is to have a cross-community session on this and really try to engage all the different SOs and ACs in this conversation and really see if we can determine, like, what will be the next step, what needs to happen to move this to the next level of, you know, from discussion to actual consideration and action. So we organized a session in Beijing that I think was quite well attended and really had some really good discussion. As I said, we did invite all the different SOs and ACs to participate, but due to various reasons, we didn't get everyone there. We did have participation from the ASTAC and the ALAC, and majority of all the GNSO stakeholder groups and constituencies participated in that meeting. Again, I think it may be helpful for the working group to look at that as well. That session was recorded and transcribed. I also took some notes, and I'm happy to share those as well with the group if you think that will be helpful. And basically, one of the outcomes or the concrete takeaways, I think, from that session was that the council decided to form a drafting team to develop a charter focusing on the GNSO-related aspects of this discussion. Because as you'll see in the staff discussion paper, there are also other questions that are being identified that, you know, are more on different levels. For example, the questions relating to, for example, what should happen if the board gets different pieces of advice from different groups? You know, should there be a process in place that, you know, brings those groups together or has a kind of conciliation mechanism? So those are questions that, you know, probably should be considered or addressed at some point. But as those are not GNSO specific, those weren't included as part of this work. So the charter came out of that effort, really focused on the GNSO specific questions or aspects of this discussion. And I think that's why you're all here today. And so here's just listed all the further reading, all the documents I've referred to. I've also listed here that the GNSO PDP opportunities for streamlining and improvements. We had a brief conversation about that last week. I look back at it and you know, there are a couple of things there that look at how can we streamline the current process or make more use of the opportunities that exist within the current framework to, for example, have additional conversations or make use of face-to-face time. But I don't think any of those specifically relate to what the working group is looking at or addressing. But if you feel differently, feel free to have a look. And again, if you think there's anything in there that may be useful to consider here, that's, of course, your prerogative. And I think that basically wraps up all I wanted to share today. And if there are any questions or anything you think I should further clarify or provide more details on, I'm happy to do so.
All right, Marika. It looks like we have questions from Anne and Alan.
No. I'll defer to Alan.
Was he clapping? I can't tell.
And that was a hand I left up from before, so
okay.
You don't have to defer.
Jay Scott, I see your hand is up. I will defer to you.
No, I'm lowered. I am lowered, so go ahead.
Now that Marika has made it through her presentation, I really do have questions, Jay Scott, with respect to that alternate method of an implementation review that was the Trademark Clearinghouse. My questions are, how was it constituted, and was it something from the board asking for volunteers? If it was not a GNSO body, how was it constituted, and who determined when it should begin and when it should end?
This is Rick. I can't really answer that because, as I said, it wasn't a GNSO-initiated or requested process, and I wasn't directly involved in that. I don't know if anyone else here on the call was a participant there and has further light to share on that. But as I said, it wasn't an implementation review team as under the PDP manual. There was no GNSO involvement or direction on that. So I'm not sure how relevant or how it directly links to the questions we're looking at here. Or at least I don't have an answer to that specific question, but maybe someone else does.
Okay, I'm going to go to Alan now. But it seems to me, Anne, that the better question would be is to ask who's heading up that implementation at ICANN and ask them those questions, because it doesn't appear to be something that was done under the PDP, so it's not necessarily relevant to the discussions today. Alan?
Yeah, I'm just for clarification, are we talking about the implementation review team, the IRT, or something else with the word implementation in it?
I think what Anne is talking about is there was a group put together to provide input with regards to the implementation of the trademark clearinghouse. And her questions have to do, how was that group constituted, who picked who was on that group, who decided when they began the work and their work ended. And I think Marika's answer is she doesn't know because it wasn't a PDP designated group under the policy.
I can address that a little bit.
Okay.
My recommendation, however, since we're using PDP terminology, is to avoid that subject like the plague, because it was a kind word is botched in how it was done and generated a huge amount of ill will, and it is not an example that we want to follow on. It was constituted as a group of registrars and registries, and then the intellectual property people who were also involved in it, and then other groups were added as they complained or as they found out about it, and ultimately resulted in what is known as the straw man proposal. And again, best left as not an example to try to follow. One can go into more detail, but probably this is not the right place or the time for it.
All right. So with that, does anyone have any more questions about Marika's presentation? If not, I think we need to decide what our next steps are going to be and when our next meeting is going to be. And first of all, I think the first thing to conquer would be, when's our next meeting going to be? Because we are now off our schedule. And next week, Marika, if I'm not correct, you all... the ICANN staff has internal meetings that are going to make you virtually unavailable. Is that not correct?
Yeah, this is Marika. That's correct. I do believe that we discussed at the last meeting, or at least with the chairs, that we would basically stick with our original schedule, so that now we have indeed a little bit of a bigger gap, which probably will as well give some time to the sub-team to do their work and have something more to present at the next meeting, and basically reconvene will be in 3 weeks, I guess. I mean...
I see that Tom Barrett has raised his hand. Tom? Tom?
He's probably gone.
Well, I mean, he's raised his hand, so...
Oh, here we go.
If we can't hear them for some reason, Tom, you could always type into the chat box and we can read your question to the group.
He did.
Okay, what process is required to update the process Marika described?
This is Marika. If you're talking about revising the PDP manual or Annex A, basically that requires recommendations from this group that we need to go to the GNSO Council. I think for any changes to the operating procedures or the bylaws, there's requirements for, you know, public comments, and there's also board oversight over those. But in principle, it's the GNSO Council would need to adopt those changes for them to become into effect. I think changes to bylaws do need board approval as well, but operating procedures themselves are within the GNSO remit to change.
Thank you. Do we have the hard date for when that next meeting would be, Marika? Is that going to be the
17th? We had originally set it at 16th of October.
Okay. So
that was our original schedule.
Okay. And... our next steps, I would believe, would be to hear, hopefully, an updated report on where we are with regards to the sub-teams planning and getting us to sort of an outline of what we're going to tackle. In the meantime, I think everyone needs, you've got 3 weeks to read all the materials that were at the beginning of this presentation. Marika, with this presentation, can you send this to the group via email?
Yes, definitely.
All right. Does anyone else have any questions or concerns or something they would like to see us cover in our next meeting? Just waiting because there are a lot of people typing. I want to make sure that there's nothing coming through on the chat in relation to that question. Okay, it looks like we're good. So I know we've slotted an hour and a half, but we've taken an hour and 5 minutes, or actually since we started at 4 after the hour, an hour and 1 minute of actual presentation. I'm going to call this meeting to a close, and I want to thank everyone for their time, especially Marika and Michael and Michael's sub-team for all their hard work over the last week or so in putting all of this together. And we will reconvene on October 16th. Now, Marika, that will be back at our original time, which was 1900 UTC?
Yes, that's correct.
And I'm sure Natalie will send us an invitation so we can get that on our calendars. In the meantime, everyone, please, please, please review the materials that I see. You can also find them on the wiki page. So we all make sure that we're starting with a baseline of information that will assist us. In the meantime, we will see you then. Everyone have a pleasant 3 weeks. We will talk to you soon. Bye.
Bye.